Hello, everybody. I'm George from Ireland. Well, this is about prohibition in the United States. I think you missed the beginning. I'm George from Ireland. So about prohibition in the USA, cast my mind back to the 1920s, and it required an amendment to the US Constitution. Was it the 19th? I think the 18th was the one granting women the right to cast ballots in every state. Some states had done so much earlier. New Jersey, just after independence, then reversed it. And likewise, prohibition, that was up to the state and the county. So some states, particularly in the Deep South, the Bible Belt, they'd forbidden alcohol by law decades earlier. So, alcoholism is definitely bad for people. We know that it affects the liver, the eyes, the brain, the arteries and so forth, hardening them because they need that elasticity. It can cause strokes, whatever. So cirrhosis of the liver, increase the risk of cancer. People get, you know, drink driving, they crash and kill other people themselves, depression. Also they can just slip over and die. Had about a 17-year-old having a few drinks in his birthday. Think it's a bright idea to walk on the city walls at night, falling off and dying. So it leads to violence. Emotional dysregulation. People don't think twice. People spending all their money on that, no money left for food, getting sacked. So it could cause misery. So prohibition, as in forbidding alcohol, was a movement in Ireland at the time, and Great Britain and so on. Now there's temperance, which is sometimes against drink, getting drunk, not against drinking per se, or getting people to voluntarily renounce alcohol, not trying to make it a crime. But the United States, they went a step further, said, no, we've actually got to outlaw it. There was the Anti-Saloon League, which was women-led, because they didn't get to enjoy the alcohol very much, but they bore the brunt of it, so there's violent alcoholic husbands. So a noble social experiment, that's what was it President Warren Gamaliel Harding said. And so then it took effect in 1920 on the 17th of January. We just passed the anniversary of it. But as we all know, it was a debacle. This is more honour than the breach and the observance in the northern states, particularly those with large Catholic communities, because in Catholicism, it's regarded as completely honourable. Of course, there's wine served at Mass because it's the blood of Christ, and it's communion wine is fortified. It's more alcohol than ordinary wine. Now, there are exemptions for wine used in religious ceremonies, Catholic, Episcopalian, and Jewish ones. And the one thing was we say alcohol was forbidden in prohibition. It was severely restricted. People were still allowed to make wine and beer at home for private consumption to serve to guests for free. You wouldn't ask them to be making your guests pay for it. That's called running a pub. Alcohol could be served and sold in restaurants, so on, if it was under 0.5% alcohol. Well, that's very, very weak. A beer might be 4% on average. So what, an eighth of the usual strength of a beer and so on. So it became a crime to sell it, but not to drink it somehow, not to possess it and so forth. So as we know, it was a flop, and it put money into the hands of gangsters because they began selling it. And Canada had experimented with this and just turned away from it and scrapped its prohibition. And that's when, was it called Crown Whiskey or Royal Crown, Canadian Whiskey came out. And obviously people were able to get alcohol from Mexico, from Bahamas, from Cuba and so forth. And the Canadian force, the law was up to 4 miles off the coast. We're going there. I think the law didn't apply to Native American reservations, some of them who were making alcohol. And by the way, they had a gene that made them particularly susceptible to alcoholism. Fire water, as some called it. So as we know, it was a disaster. And that's why when President Franklin Delano Roosevelt came in, one of his electoral pledges was to persuade Congress to repeal that that amendment of the Constitution, which they successfully did, and he enjoyed a beer himself. So you may know Al Capone made such a fortune out of it. So and obviously some states were allowed to forbid it there were some counties in Texas, the recent 1970s, that were dry counties. So that's it. You know, Russia had experimented with prohibition. Norway, Sweden, Iceland had all experimented with prohibition at roughly the same time. And they concluded everywhere that it was disastrous. But some people were determined not to learn the lesson. All sorts of drugs like, opiates and cocaine and so on were completely legal until the 1920s and have been forbidden. And the abuse of these drugs has proliferated. Now, drugs are very, very bad for people. It'd be much better not to take them. It's very stupid to poison yourself with that filth. I never touched that stuff, not cannabis, not anything. But should it be against the law? Is the criminal law really the right instrument with which to deal with this, rather than seeing it as a public health thing, trying to educate people out of it, which you try and do anyway, get people to seek rehabilitation, which we can do anyway, but it's just putting more money into the hands of organized crime. So if we legalize these things, would consumption increase or decrease? It might even increase. Obviously, the philosophical point that even if it does increase, despite the social harms, nevertheless, bodily autonomy. People have the right to do what they want, including foolish things. So there's this non-aggression principle, like John Stuart Mill, a liberal member of parliament, saying, you know, you can do anything you want so long as you don't harm others. By which we mean really harm others, not just hurt their feelings. And so people have the right to make their own decisions, including mistakes, including stupid decisions, which mean that they die sooner. Addiction is not a choice. Well, it is. It's to take the first time. And addiction, obviously, is a spectrum. If you do anything twice, you're addicted. Not necessarily. At what point does it become addiction? I mean, it's difficult to say. And just because a few people will be addicted to anything, whether it's gambling or computer games or pornography or shopping or jogging, and anything in excess is bad for you. Even water, even clean, safe, potable water will kill you. I may say not comparing like with like, in as much as you have to have water to live. So which is not to say that we're not trying to stop you having it altogether, whereas you can live your life without heroin or cocaine or alcohol. And these things are always harmful. Just depends how harmful and in what amount. But anyway, so and then some states in the US have been more sensible, decriminalizing cannabis. And much of Canada has, much of Europe has. So we want to decriminalize all these things. You can't make them safe. You can make them less dangerous. Speaking to a young man from Nottingham the other day, Nottingham, United Kingdom, a city very badly afflicted by drug violence, Shottingham, they called it. And he concurred that they ought to be that decriminalization the way forward. Or one of my friends, a consultant psychiatrist, who takes that view. I know there are other experts in the field who take the opposite view. But there we go. I suppose to be a disagreeing without being disagreeable, I'm supposed to say I respect the argument I disagree with. And in this case, I actually do. I realize there are some respective arguments on the other side. And again, there's like a spectrum of harmful substances from like sugar at the bottom right up to heroin at the top. And I know society is entitled to decide where it draws the line. Yeah. How harmful is too harmful? It's a Sorites paradox. But yeah, nobody in the United States, so far as I know, advocates for outlawing it. But they did say we'll have the drinking age at 21. I believe it's not a federal law, but all states have agreed to do it because they wouldn't get subsidies for their highways unless they set the drinking age at 21, which is like one of the highest in the world. Many countries 18, and many countries 16, and we wouldn't object 16-year-olds drinking a bit. The United Kingdom, certainly, they're allowed to drink as long as having a substantial meal. Is it one glass of wine or one pint of beer, so long as they're in the immediate presence of their parents and eating it from a table or similar service? I don't know why, surface-wise, be a table. They could just drink the alcohol and not eat the food. The idea is to absorb some of it, and they don't get so impacted by it. Maybe they drink slower as well. So what do you think? Prohibition, good idea, bad idea? People died from drinking all sorts of other alternative substances, you know, of pure alcohol, which were really bad for them. So it's just unenforceable. It's so corrupted that police, as they remember someone who was involved in this said, with so much money sloshing around, how can corruption not happen? Police officers tempted, customs officers tempted, accountants, you know, judges, politicians, or indeed people to launder the profits through their businesses. What do you think? Anyway, so that was the Volstead Act, as in the Norwegian-American politician who shepherded it through the, I think it's the House of Representatives. Thanks for watching my video. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, PayPal, georgecalland7@gmail.com. Goodbye.